Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Are you one of many Americans who are tired of people being bullied and discriminated? You are not alone. Bullying has a rippling effect on the person who is being harassed and everyone associated with the bullied person. The targeted adult or child may have been physically or psychologically bullied. They often bring home their anguish with them, and this can have a crippling effect on everyone associated with the one who's being bullied or discriminated. It's time to shed some light on how to reduce bullying in the school systems, how to create safe and healthy work environments for employees. I blow the whistle on how to protect yourself if you're being bullied and educate listeners on their rights if they're being bullied or discriminated. I bring in the best experts who provide empowering strategies, tips on resiliency, how to handle the experience of being bullied or discriminated, how to heal and overcome the effects of being mistreated. If you are ready to gain knowledge and insights on bullying and discrimination, you are in the right place. Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Have you ever been bullied in high school? Well, today's guest, Zach Vandenberg, he has been bullied, but why he was bullied is really not fair. He claims that he is gay and that he's been treated differently for being gay. That's discrimination. So let me tell you about Zach. He's a very inspiring person. I've known him for a while. He's funny, and he wrote a book, and we're going to talk about his book in a bit. But he talks about being inspired by women, Maya Angelou, Judith Sundlin, and that's Judge Judy, if you didn't know that. I didn't know that. And so his mother, he's very close with his mother, and they've all been driving examples in his life. And so at a young age, you know, he dealt with bullying in his freshman year of high school, and that is when it was a pivotal moment of life. It's taught him to stand up for himself, and oh, can he stand up for himself? We'll talk about that. And to fight the bystander effects. So at 18, Zach wrote his first novel about his experience, and at 19, he had it published. Since then, he's also been published in a collaborative effort, Jill Vanderwood's Erase the Problem of Bullying. After several years of running a small real estate business, he now currently attends schools with aspirations to study law and become an attorney. We do need attorneys, so I hope he becomes an employment attorney. So welcome, Zach. Come on and tell everybody your why. Why did you start doing this kind of work? Why did you write the book?
Hi. I basically, when I was about 17 years old, 18 years old, I'd seen this basically news article come on, and I was literally sitting with my laptop trying to figure out what I was going to write my first novel about. I definitely wanted to be a novelist, and I was contemplating what I wanted to write my first novel on, and I saw a news article come across the screen about a boy who had died at 13 years old. And, you know, I'm thinking, oh my God, it was a horrible car crash or something like that. And they said that they found him hanging in his garage.
Oh my.
And I thought, my God, what would possess a 13-year-old to do something like that? And they said it was because he was being called gay at school and things like that. And it just seemed like this epidemic wave at the time, this was about 2010, 2011, of all of these suicides by young kids from bullying or from gay bullying specifically. And I said to myself, you know, I went through horrible bullying when I was, you know, when I was a freshman in high school. Maybe that's what I should do my story on. You know, Laurie Halse Anderson's Speak was what gave me a lot of strength through that time to realize that other people had gone through it. And I thought maybe if someone wrote something that was a little more centric to gay bullying in specific, since that seemed to be what all these kids were killing themselves from, maybe that would have a difference.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. And it's so unfortunate. And you're in a small town. And when you're in a small town, everybody knows you. So talk about a typical day going to high school, because I know when I went to high school, there was a lot of bullying too, and it wasn't fun getting on the bus either. And you wrote about that in your book. So what was a
Yeah.
typical day for you?
Freshman year was really the year that I had the worst time, and it was everything from getting on the bus to go home. It was horrible because I was terrified that I was going to see this kid and that he was going to, humiliate me or call me a name or something. And then I was not only terrified of that, but I was terrified that I would get so angry at some point that I would lose control and that I would, go after this kid and get in a lot of trouble. So it was horrible. I had a half empty bottle of Pepsi thrown at the back of my head at one point on the way home from school. And teachers would see it, didn't do anything. Bus drivers would see it, didn't do anything. And it was just kind of like, okay, you're not going to do anything, but as soon as I stand up for myself, you're going to say, hey, these two got in a fight. So it just kind of, it was ridiculous to me, and I didn't really know what to do. I think the biggest problem was I felt so powerless of it. I mean, I just felt like I couldn't do anything about it. So that really, really genuinely bothered me the most.
I could see why it would bother you. It's not fair for, people to be bullied and then adults, especially employees at a school system, to watch and not do something about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You must have felt really abandoned in that
Yeah,
respect.
I felt like it kind of felt like people were like, I don't want to get involved in that. I don't want that. That's none of my business. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's that kind of attitude, I think, that, that bystander kind of effect of nobody doing anything. And it's really a shame because it's like, I think that it typically works that if one person says something, a few more people will say something, and then a few more people will say something because they feel more comfortable in a group. And I really feel like that would have been the case. But really, nobody wanted to get involved. It was kind of this, once in a while, I had a friend that would stick up for me, but it really often was not a thing. Nobody mentioned anything. It was almost like, I was shoved into a locker once, not an open locker, but just walking down the hall, I was just shoved into the set of lockers. And it was like, a full, it was during passing period, it was a full, hallway, and nobody did anything. Nobody did anything. Nobody said anything. It was just like nothing happened. And I think it was just people, they did not, because I was not his only target. And I think that people just didn't want to be next, and it's not like he was a deeply intimidating person by any means. Scrawny guy, but for some reason, I was afraid to defend myself because I didn't want to get in trouble from, the authorities, or I didn't want to get expelled. But it just was like, you don't want to go to a teacher and tell somebody because then it's like it gets worse from there. You know what I mean? Because
I
then the
do.
teacher's like, oh, and so told me that you were doing this. And then it's like, okay, well, now, you know what I mean? So it just makes it worse. And that was kind of my limbo. I didn't really know what to do.
Yeah, I understand. And to tell our listeners, I was bullied. I'm older than you. I probably could be your mother, but being on that age. But the thing is that, I was bullied as a child. I remember getting on the bus and, I grew up in Fort Lauderdale, moved up to North Florida, which was very country, very rural. And I know I'd get on the bus and my brothers would get on the bus and the kids wouldn't move over and the bus driver would be screaming, "Sit down, sit down, sit down." And I'm thinking, I can't. So I'd go to the next seat and they would pretend they didn't see me. And it was so horrible. I just didn't fit in. Did you ever feel like you just didn't fit in, Zach?
Oh, that was 90% of the time, honestly, especially my freshman year. I was maybe one of five total kids that were, gay and I wouldn't say out about it, but, known to be. And, you know, out of maybe 15, 2,000 kids. So it was just kind of like, you know, it was really hard. The interesting part about my book is that I always he goes so hard to go unnoticed, and that's really genuinely what I wanted to do. I wanted to go unnoticed. You know, I wanted to be conspicuous and not seen or heard. And it was just like from day one, it was impossible to do that because I just stood out so much.
Yeah, and tell our
And I would.
listeners the name of your book too, because I'm sure there will be people interested in finding your book.
Yeah, the name of my book is Inanimate Heroes, and it basically settles around a boy named Andy who is going to a small town high school. And he is gay, and he has this preconceived notion right away that it's going to be a problem because it's a small town school. So if anyone finds out, it's just going to be a problem. So it's, you know, terrified to have anyone find out. And then almost, I believe, within the third day or the third chapter of the book, you know, somebody noticed something. You know, I think it was something as ridiculous as my hair, and said something about, you know, why don't you stop, just cut your hair, faggot, or something like that. And I, you know, it was at that moment where I was like, okay, I'm not going to be able to hide anymore.
Sure,
And
yeah.
it bothered me so much because, you know, I would go home and I would think, okay, should I cut my hair? Should I, you know, should I do? And I was trying to appease these people, and that bothered me, you know, down the line, because I didn't think about it at first, but it really genuinely bothered me down the line when I was thinking to myself, why am I trying to appease these people? You know, what exactly good does that do? They're never going to be happy. That's not really the reason why they're taking out it on me. So it was just kind of, it was disheartening. It was really disheartening. I kind of thought, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, wow, this is what life is going to be like. You know what I mean? This is, you know, I went to small middle school, which was also combined with a grade school. And then, you know, it was a much bigger high school. And it was kind of like, wow, so this is what it's going to be like for the rest of my life. And of course it wasn't, but it just, it feels that when you're a kid. And I think, you know, people will say things like, you know, how resilient children are. And one of my quotes is, I don't think children are resilient. I think children are like metal. And, you know, you do things and you heat them up and you heat them up. And then when things down, they're like that, you know, no matter which way ever, whatever way they've bent when they were warm, they're going to stay that way when they're cold. And when things cool down, it affects them down the long run. I don't think children are as resilient as people give them credit for. So I think that it has a big effect on their futures. Now, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with you. Definitely, you know, children, some children can be resilient, but, you know, really is their belief system and how they're conditioned, you know, around their culture, their mentor, their teachers, their parents and such. So they could look at the world with fear where everything is just horrible, or they can look at the world like, hey, there are a lot of good things. And yeah, there's some bumps along the way. But I know you pretty well now, over the years, and I've watched you grow, and you're very much an advocate. How, when I say advocate, you're an advocate for people. I mean, you're always standing up for people and you're pointing out on social media things that are wrong and things. And I do pay attention to that and people who do that. What shifted in you, Zach? What changed? I mean, I could see why you might have felt, you know, victimized as a child, you know, because you were, and you were abandoned by the teachers and the people that should have been helping you.
Right. Yeah, I mean, honestly, it made me feel like I needed to stand up for the little guy. It's one of the reasons why I've always wanted to be an attorney, and now I'm finally pursuing that. I've always wanted, because I hated it. I just hated the fact that nobody, it bothered me so much that nobody even attempted to really stand up for me. And I mean, I should have been standing up for myself. I do admit that. But at the same time, it was just kind of like, really, nobody's gonna say anything. Nobody's gonna be like, wow, this is really ridiculous. This is insane. So when I see things like that, I really feel a need to speak up and say something. That's why I really hate it when I see things about minorities being targeted or things like that, because I know what that's like. Absolutely. You know,
Absolutely.
I hear things, you know, about, I always hear from, not to upset anybody, but I hear from white male straight people that will say things like, oh, you know, what are you worried about? You don't have it that bad. And I say, well, of course. You know, you're a white straight male. You're not really in that target zone. So of course you don't understand. You're kind of with the majority, you know? And it's like when you're in that point, of course you really it you might have a harder time seeing it. I know a lot of wonderful advocates that are white straight males, but it's just funny to me sometimes because I will see people that I debate constantly, and I see people that say, oh, well, what is so bad? What rights do you really not have? And I say, well, it's not necessarily only the rights that some people don't have, but it's the fact that some people don't get to be treated like other people, and it's just the way it is. And I don't want it to be that way. So, as long as it's like that, I intend to fight against it. But my biggest thing was when I was in school, I couldn't physically fight back. So, you know, I would come back with witty retorts instead. I started to, which is another reason why I'm pretty good with arguing and why I think, well, as an attorney, is I would think of nonviolent ways to retaliate, you know? And that was why, one of the reasons why, you know, I liked Judge Judy or my mother so much was because they were both very much like that. You know, they could send you to shreds with their wit instead of, you know, even having to lay a finger on you. And I thought that that was really such a cool thing to be able to do. And I would not even joking, which is a little embarrassing, but I would sit in my room and have these, you know, fake arguments. Well, if he says this, this is what I'm going to say. Or if he's,
Yeah. I'm laughing. I've done it too, Zach. But go
I
ahead.
would basically be snarky, you know what I mean? Like, and you know, even like Bea Arthur from the Golden Girls, or you know, I would practice things like that. And I was really, by the time I was in sophomore year, I was pretty formidable. Nobody really wanted to get into that tango with me. And I, to this day, take a lot of pride in that because I think a lot of people avoid ideological warfare with me for that reason. I've been a person that I stand up for what I feel is right. And I feel like as long as I'm standing up for what I feel is right, then I really can't be wrong. So it's whoever can present the best argument, and that's what I'm hopefully going to school to learn. So
Yeah, and I know you're going to do a great job in school. I think, what do you have, a couple more years?
yeah, I basically I stopped for about, that was when I started running the business, was I was going to school and then I stopped when my father got sick. I went on hiatus from school to start running the business, and I was running the business while he was recovering from surgeries and getting better. And finally, I just, you know, after doing the business for 6 years, I kind of decided it wasn't really for me. It was nice to have, but it just kind of wasn't my path. And I decided, you know, I think I really genuinely want to go to law school. My friend Rohit, you know, eventually just kind of said, do it, you know, I mean, stop talking about it. 'Cause he was going to law school. He currently is. And I would say, you know, what do you think? How do you like it? What are you doing? But he said, yeah, you know, I really, it's really fulfilling. And I think that, you should do it if you want to do it. And I said, you know what, I do. And I signed up for class that month. And so I'm currently going for my undergraduate, and then I'm going to a different school for law school. But yeah, it's just something I've always liked to do, even at town hall meetings and things like that. I just really love arguing. And I love being able to argue, for the people and for what I think is right, and being able to utilize, once again, I mean, being a lawyer in a way is kind of one of those ways where you can utilize your intellectuality instead of fighting physically to resolve conflicts. And I think that that's a really great thing. I think there's definitely a cynical view of law, but I think that that is a great thing that we can do in our society. So solving things without throwing punches. And it's not, my father was a martial arts instructor, and he taught all of us when we were kids. I mean, I've been doing martial arts since I was 8 or 9 years old. And it's not that I couldn't, it's just that I never wanted to, it sounds kind of selfish, but I never really wanted to hurt someone because I was terrified of getting in trouble for doing it. Because these people, we'd known people that had defended themselves and hurt someone and gotten a lot of trouble. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do this to my family or myself. It didn't seem really worth it to hurt someone and then get yourself, in trouble or lose some part of your life. Because they're going to heal from that. You probably won't. So yeah. I didn't see a purpose in that. And that was another reason why I really felt the need to write my book, was because there were moments when I was being bullied that I wanted to do violent things because I was so angry. There were times when I would see this kid, at his locker, and I just, God, I bet I could swing at him.
Yeah.
And I could really deck him in the face if I wanted to. And I don't think anyone would see, because there's nobody in the hall right now. There were things that I would think like that. And then I would go about my day and I would think, oh my God, I'm a monster. I'm a terrible.
Well, how did you manage your anger? Because it's just normal. It's normal to be mad at somebody who's mistreating you. It's just wrong. How did you, how did you have the discipline and the control?
Ironically, one of the ways that I did have a lot of anger and anger management, I would say, was through martial arts. I did do a lot of martial arts. I did a lot of Ishin Ryu, which is a sword style that I did.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of Wing Chun Kung Fu. I did a lot of different things that would get that energy out. And I, obviously at many times pictured the bag was him. But there were other things too. That's why I named the book Inanimate Heroes, was because my heroes were, in a sense, inanimate. They were, Judge Judy, watching her at the end of the day and listening to David Bowie and Amanda Palmer, and, reading Maya Angelou and Laurie Halse Anderson. They were people, they really existed, but they didn't know me, and they were helping me more than any real person was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to kind of see if other people felt that way, if that's what other people turned to, if other people turned to music and movies and shows and things like that. Because honestly, when I got home, it was the first thing I turned to. And when I was getting bullied on the bus and yelled at from the back of the bus, I was blasting, music, Amanda Palmer, David Bowie in my ears so that I couldn't hear what he had to say. If I couldn't hear it, then it didn't ruin my day. And it got to that point. And it was a point where I kind of realized later down the road, like, wow, I let it get that bad.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't do anything to stop it. And I regret that a little bit to this day, that I didn't just throw caution to the wind and do something, you know, even if I had just snapped verbally. But I never really did because I just didn't want to escalate it to that level. Because I didn't know if I could control myself once I did. So,
Well, that makes sense.
and
We all have a breaking point, you know, everybody does.
I just don't want kids to feel like I did. You know, I felt like I said, I felt like a monster. You know what I mean? Like I felt, God, I'm this violent person, you know, and all this stuff. And then, you know, not of course, giving any justification for these school shootings or anything, but you know, this bullying is going on, and these, well, in my experience, which I hear this all the time, is that teachers see this stuff and they don't do anything, or they don't know how to do anything because, you know, not really trained for it. And I think to myself, well, no wonder why these kids are going off the deep end and snapping. Now, like I said, I'm not at all saying that that is a justification for what they're doing, but it just, I wonder honestly if it would help the problem a bit if teachers were trained in how to deal with that and how to, you know, or they, you know, had some reason to intervene, because nobody did, you know, when I was a kid, and that's my experience. I don't know, maybe some people did have teachers, you know, stand up for them, but nobody really did. And the one teacher that I had, Miss Carlisle, she was fantastic. She never actually saw me, you know, get bullied or anything like that, but she was my last class of the day, and it just happened to be my favorite subject, English. And she was fantastic. There was a kid that was throwing paper balls at another student, and I wrote this in the book even. And she said, "What are you doing?" She said, "Is it not enough that there was a, it was recently when a school shooting had happened?" And she said, "Is it not enough that a school was just recently shot up, and you're gonna sit here and bully this kid, and you don't understand how things like this happen or why things like that happen?" And you know, the kid was kind of like, "Oh, well, I wasn't, you know." And you could tell that the kid that was having the balls of paper thrown at him was not in on the joke. You know what I mean? Like, it
Yeah,
wasn't
I
like,
do.
yeah, two friends joking around. And she really inspired me, you know, that there were people that cared. It was unfortunate she had never seen me, and I had never told her. You know, it was funny, we were in senior year, and she asked, when I was writing the book, I said who it was about and everything, and she goes, "Why didn't you tell me?" And I said, "You know, I didn't want to tell anybody. I just kind of hoped someone would see and do something, you know." And you know, the teachers that didn't. They didn't say anything. And it was heartbreaking because they were some people that I really admired, and they did nothing, you know. So she was wonderful. She really helped a lot, and I to this day thank her for that. For just, you know, even if she didn't stand up for me, she did stand up for students, and I thought that that was fantastic.
That is
So
wonderful. Yeah, teachers have a tough role. It's interesting you're bringing this up because I just had an interview with a man named Felix Nader, who's in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is a couple hours from where I live. And he's actually what's called a security consultant. So he's the kind of person that goes in and teaches schools and companies how to deal with violence, not just bullying. We're talking about mass shootings and things like that. And he was addressing the fact that the teachers really need to focus on teaching. The leadership in the school system, they need to be focusing on protecting the children and such, and bringing in people that are qualified to train them and teach them, because straight up, some people just don't know how to, you know, how to handle these things. They might think they do, but they don't. So I want to ask you, if somebody came to you and they were being picked on because, you know, they were gay, what kind of guidance or tips or advice would you give them? Or even a book? What would you know, you might even suggest your book, but tell me what you would tell them if they're being
My
harassed. Go ahead.
honest to God guidance would be, Defend your, learn how to defend yourself. And when I say that, I don't only mean physically. Now, I do highly recommend learning how to physically, defend yourself. Take your self-defense seriously, because as much as I hate to say it, and I want to say that it's not true, you will be targeted. You will be seen as the odd one out. Especially depending on where you live. If you live in a rural area, like about 65% of the country does, you're going to have that, and you need to prepare for it. You need to prepare for, there's, unfortunately, I'm very involved in the gay community in my area, and there are people every day that are getting attacked. And it's, I think people don't realize how often it happens. But it happens, and it's honestly like, it's things that you can't imagine. You can't imagine, really? You saw a gay person at a bar and you decided to follow them home and beat them? It just makes sense. It's things that you wouldn't even think of, you know what I mean? Things like you would think you'd only see in movies. And it is happening, because I've not only friends with some of the people that have been attacked, but I've seen attacks.
That's
And
sad. That's very sad.
it is. And it's like, it's not even, the attacks that I've seen were not severe. They were things like, shoving a backpack off of a guy's shoulder and things like that. But
That's still wrong, and that's still
yeah,
harassment.
I see that hostility in a lot of times. And even just the other day, believe it or not, I was in college. And you'd think you wouldn't deal with this kind of thing in a college. And we were talking about political ideologies that we didn't agree with, and someone brought up Milo. Yeah, I don't honestly know how to pronounce his last name, but he is a gay conservative. I would consider him a white nationalist. I really don't approve of his political views, but is gay. And one of the students in the class said, yeah, I agree with him, and I like the way that he debates his things, but I just wish he wasn't so gay about it. And I thought to myself, like, really? Like, you are fine with the racism and then the discrimination. It's the gayness that you don't appreciate. So to me, it's just completely outrageous that even, in a classroom setting in a college, a popular college that has a big population, and people are still like that, and it's just ridiculous. So back thing is, just know how to defend yourself physically. It's so important in just every way that you can. I mean, I don't know if you're a gun advocate, but if you have concealed carry and if you need to protect yourself, please do. Get those kind of things so that you can protect yourself, because I'm telling you right now, you're being targeted a lot more than most people. So, but not only that, you need to be able to defend yourself in two other ways. You need to be able to defend yourself intelligently, meaning not just witty comments, but you need to be able to say when someone says something stupid or uninformed or ignorant about, about gay people or about something. I was told the other day that, for example, the Stonewall riots that occurred, someone said something about, it was actually not a straight person that. It was actually a straight person that threw the first bottle. And I said, where are you getting this information? That's absolutely not true. I stated the things that had happened, and it was actually, believe it or not, a black transgender woman who led that movement. And it's things like that that you have to know, because these people are coming at you not only possibly physically, and they're not going to only come at you with hateful, stupid remarks. They're going to come after your rights at some point. And you need to know these things. You need to know the history. And this is obviously specifically for gay people, but I mean, you need to know your stuff, because if
Mm-hmm.
you do get into an ideological battle of things like that, and even it's a public setting, of course, you want to possibly be able to sway someone else and say, oh, that guy's a real moron. So we're not going to listen to him. He obviously doesn't know what he's talking about. You know what? This person seems like they know what they're talking about. And if they're one of these people, then maybe that makes a lot more sense. Maybe I was misinformed. Maybe the people that were telling me these people were bad were wrong. Because hate is taught.
Yeah, I
Hate is
agree.
absolutely taught. And it's not, and it can be unlearned. So
Absolutely, yeah.
think. Yeah, and I think it's genuinely, I know it is an unfortunate burden of the minority, but it is in a way, because we can't expect people that are not within the minority to do it of their own volition. I think it's important to be an advocate. You know, don't be afraid to say, if someone says something that you don't agree with, hey, you know, that's kind of ignorant. You know what I mean? Like when that gentleman said that in that class, I said, you know, overt racial prejudice is wrong regardless of you know, a lisp or a sissy tone or weak.
Yeah.
It's not okay. And it's just absurd, some of the things that people say, and they say it because they don't feel they'll be challenged. And once they are challenged, they won't come. After we had that conflict, I have not seen that student in that class. You know what I mean?
Wow.
I mean, I think he genuinely felt that, okay, I'm not going to be able to say these things. I'm not back. And it seemed like he dropped the class because he was no longer there. He hasn't been there all week. And it was since that incident. And I really think that people that are like that because they've never been challenged. Because nobody says, what are you saying? What are you doing? What are you trying to accomplish here? Because I know that that's crap, and I know that that's not true, and I can prove source A, source B, source C that you are wrong. So I think that that's really important to hold people accountable when they say things that are stupid. Don't let it slide.
Yeah.
Don't say, I don't want to have a confrontation. Be upfront about it. Don't let them say it. You're just as guilty if you're a bystander, in my opinion. So, you know, get involved. Don't let those kind of things slide, because that's how people get as bad as they get, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I'm
So.
going to jump in because we're going to have to wrap up. You've been giving out really, really great advice. So, if you're being bullied in the school system, it's very important to speak up and go to the parents, go to the teachers, document it. I'm a big fan of email trails because email trails are good, permanent documentation. And if you're gay and being harassed in the workplace, I can tell you as an HR expert that bullying in the workplace is not illegal. However, discrimination, and you can go to www.eeoc.gov, which is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. You can just Google or search LGBT, and it will explain how many folks have to be in the company, for the company to be accountable, and what the rights are for LGBT. Because I have a lot of friends, and I know that are gay. Some that are transgender, I just see people. I don't see them as being gay or transgender or whatever. I just see people. My best friend is black. And the thing is that, we do have to speak up. And I love the movement, the Me Too, but we also have to do more than Me Too, because Me Too is just, okay, you count, your attitude that we have to be doing what you're doing, Zach, is it's very cathartic, writing a book, and it's very cathartic and healing for somebody to read your book. And I bought it, I read it. I think I told you I couldn't put it down. I was like, wow. And you
Thank you.
really, yeah, and you really know you get over bullying when you're not triggered by things that you got triggered in the past. So as we wrap up, if anybody wants to contact you, and no pun in, no pun meaned, but if whether they're gay or not gay, and they just are inspired by you, Zach, how could they get a hold of you?
You can definitely send me an email. That'd be great, at ZACK. WVAN, that's Zach W. Van, at gmail.com. I always love responding to emails. I've gotten a lot that were very very interesting and very beneficial to that, and I really love being able to help people out. So definitely feel free to contact me. I would love to talk to you and love to go over what you might be going through. You know, I had that great network of friends. My best friends, you know, are the reason why I'm so strong. My
Good point.
friends really were the reason that I was able to get through it, because I knew as long as I had them. So it's good to have that connection with people that it really genuinely helps. That's another way to combat it is, you know, even if it's online, get a good friend that you can talk to and tell things to and confide in, because it helps a lot.
Yes, wonderful advice. I'm so proud of you and thank you for your advocacy. You know, I love advocacy in other people, and I realize it's not for everybody. It takes guts, it takes courage, and you know, even when you're doing the right thing, you're going to have people, you know, come after you or, you know, hate you, but that's just where they're at. So I'm so happy you came on. Thank you so much. And to our audience, stay empowered and have a good evening.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening to the Empowered Whistleblower. As your host, I will continue to bring in the best experts to share their knowledge and empower our listeners. Nobody has to feel like a victim. There are solutions to bullying and discrimination. Everyone deserves to be treated with respect and dignity. All our future shows will offer practical guidance so that anyone can choose to stand up to bullying and discrimination. You deserve to be happy, and life is all about choices. I always welcome comments and suggestions for new shows. Please comment and share your ideas, and be sure to come back for more inspiration and empowerment. I am Domery Westmoreland signing off and wishing you much happiness and empowerment in your day.